So good evening. This is the fourth. Yes, this is the fourth session, right, of our module on how to meditate. It seems like there are a couple of people who are new. Is that right? Okay, it's okay if you are. There's no nothing you've missed, I guess. Well, I shouldn't say that. Because otherwise, then people are going to say, well, why did I come to the first three? But you can jump in the middle. That's what I meant. In any case. So, last time we kind of did the full, how to structure the, like a simple meditation session, right? So we'll do that again today, but this time today, so last time I introduced, the different types of meditation, right? There was placement meditation, the concentration on the breath, for example, right? And then there's analytical meditation, right? And so we'll talk about the different types of meditation today, but since I introduced the analytical meditation last time, I thought that we could do an analytical meditation to start with, right? So let's take our meditation posture. If you remember the 7-point posture of Vairochana, Vairochana is one of the Buddhas, and it's called the posture of Vairochana. But in any case, the 7 posture. If you don't know what they are, it's all right. The most important thing is to keep your back flexible but straight, right? So you're not, tensing it. Just the natural curvature of the back, and you can keep your eyes closed or open. If you keep your eyes open, just half, the eyelids are half, whatever, mostly closed, and you just have a little, your just gaze is somewhere down in the front, past your nose. So, let's first, maybe we'll just do a quick body scan, right? So let's just go as we did last time, start with our feet and just concentrate on each part of our body to see if there's any tension. If there is, just breathe into it. You don't need to fix it. And like that all the way up to our crown of our head. So the end of which, our body will be relaxed. Make sure you concentrate on your eyebrows and your cheeks, which are often tense. Or not eyebrows, temple. Okay. So first let's set the motivation that we are, as the Buddha said, we are, the nature of our existence is pervaded by disappointment, dissatisfaction, sorrow, however you name it. And it's because of the delusions in our minds. So we're doing this practice, in a small step towards removing the delusions so that we can find the ultimate happiness, joy, peace of Buddhahood. But we're also doing this so we can help others especially. So our goal is really not just to help ourselves, but to help others. So with that motivation, we can just do it just for a couple of minutes. We'll just focus on the breath to just calm our minds. Remember that, you know, your mind might stray, but if it does, just bring it back gently, back to the breath. So one of the first things, one of the first topics in the, you know, Lama Tsongkhapa stages of the path to enlightenment on which discovering Buddhism is based is the idea of impermanence. Not that they're not permanent, it means that things are always changing. And that's encapsulated by a four-line verse, and I'll just mention it, and then we can go line by line. So the full verse is, accumulation ends in dispersal, rising ends in falling, meeting ends in parting, and birth ends in death. So it's kind of showing us how everything that we are working for in this life is temporary. Everything. So we accumulate so many things. We accumulate wealth, cars, iPods and iPhones, the next gadget. You know, the toys and so many things. And as an example, as a kind of a way to think about it, is if you think about when you move house, how you throw out so much stuff. If you threw out so much stuff, what, you probably didn't need it. That kind of shows how you we accumulate things. But at the end of it, either somebody else will get it, we will sell it and somebody else will have it. Maybe somebody will take it away from us. Maybe there'll be a recession and our bank accounts get drained. So everything that we accumulate ends in dispersal. So think about that for just a few seconds. think in your life what you accumulate maybe, or work so hard for, or maybe in the past you have worked really hard and you got something that was precious, and then somehow it was gone. Then rising ends in falling. So, we rise in status. We rise in, some days we get praised, and so our ego rises, if you will. You know, we feel really good about ourselves and walk around with a puffed, kind of puffed out chest, I guess. And then, someone says something just a slightly unkind, maybe, and the balloon just gets burst. So many people who, Bernie Madoff, for example, he was on the top of the New York financial world, and then he gets found out, and now he's spending his life in prison in Butner. So that's rising and falling in action right there. Or maybe, we get promoted, and then something happens, and there's strife or whatever, and so you have to leave the company and go look for work someplace else. I mean, so your status in that company went away, even though, it seemed like it was rising. So again, that's temporary. Then meeting ends in parting. So think about all the friends in kindergarten, for example, who seemed like it was going to be our best friend. By second grade, they were kind of, we had forgotten about them. Or your best friend from high school or college. Maybe they're gone. Something happened, your relationship faltered, or maybe they moved away, you wrote letters for a while, or I guess emails maybe, and then it kind of became Christmas cards, and even that just, you don't even think about it anymore. Or people we fell in love with and thought, he or she is the one. And that didn't turn out all so well. So many examples of that. So all meeting will end in parting. And finally, even if you do find the one, it will still end because one of the two or both will die. So birth ends in death. So whatever comes into being is destined to go away. And you can try to think about, you know, has somebody ever cheated death? You know, from the king or the emperor down to the lowest beggar are equal. So each of us, a time will come, hopefully later than sooner, where we will have to say goodbye to this world, or our, you know, loved, you know, much loved partners, our animals. So in that way, nothing in this world is permanent. Nothing in this world will be forever. But we work so very hard. We spend so much energy every single second of our life. For that accumulation, for that meeting. For that rising. But then it all has to go. So let's think about that for a few minutes. And if you get some insight, just stay with that insight. Like, just focus on that. You know, that's a really, that's from the Buddha spoke those four lines. I think it's from the Vinaya Sutra. It's if you look it up. But anyway, and it's a really powerful four lines, really. And those of you who have seen Rinpoche, you know, or those of you who don't know Rinpoche, is the third one on the right, on your right, next to His Holiness. That's his picture when he was much younger. But in any case, and he really, you know, he really talks about that, you know, to really, you know, what to really examine what are we spending our life on, you know? Just really examine what are we spending our life on. And, you know, as you'll learn in, you know, I remember that it was like a few years ago in one of the retreats, and he said, you know, you spend so much, you know, from the day you were born, you know, you go to school, you go to college, you get graduate degrees, you're doing all this stuff, right? But at the end of the day, right, if there's not something of spiritual value behind it, it's a waste. Right? That's what he said. You know, if it doesn't bring you more compassionate mind and doesn't bring you a kinder heart, doesn't, you know, make you a better person, then life is in vain. It was very, very interesting. I remember writing it down and underlining it, you know. So yeah. So anyway, so those four lines really show us, you know, and as you'll learn in one of the next modules, I'm not sure which one it is now, but you know, we spend our life on accumulation, on rising, on, well, birth we automatically get, but accumulation, rising, and what was the other one? Accumulation, engine, rising, meeting, engine, parting. That's right. And meeting, right? But think about how much energy, right, since adolescence, right, we have spent in meeting, you know, the opposite sex, right? So yeah, and almost all of them, unless you have a partner now, all of them, you know, are gone, right? So so it's interesting, yeah. So as you learn in one of the following Discovering Buddhism modules, you know, we spend our lives. I'm kind of going ahead now. I really don't need to, but I'm going to tell you anyway. You know, on these things called the eight worldly concerns, you know. So the Buddha said, if you really examine what we spend our life on, we spend them on trying to get four things and trying to avoid four things, right? We want gain, but we don't want loss, right? So we want, that means wealth. We're constantly working for wealth, security, whatever you want to call it. And we don't want not to have money, lose our, whatever, you know, the stock market to go down, whatever it is, right? So we want gain, but we don't want loss. We want pleasure, but we don't want pain. We want praise, but we don't want blame. And then what we want, a good reputation, and not people to think ill of us. Right? So those are the four, eight worldly concerns. And they're called worldly because they're not of spiritual value. So if our lives are spent, and if you examine, I've examined my life, it's pretty much spent on those eight things. You know, and if you examine yours, you'll probably find that that's also true. And if it's not true for you, I'm really happy. You know, because that means you are spending your life, you know, in a positive way. So, so that's kind of, you know, Rinpoche talks about that a lot. Anyway, that's neither here nor there for this class, for this module, right? So what we did was, so that's an analytical. So last time we talked about the different types of meditation. I'll kind of review it since it's been a couple of weeks, right? So last time I introduced the different types of meditation there are. I mean, people think meditation just means sitting on a cushion and just, you know, maybe they do yoga, so they kind of just don't want the on the breath, for example, or a sound, right? So that's called placement meditation, right? Or concentration meditation. So like you bring an object to your mind, right? The breath, the mental image of a mental image of a painting, or you know, the statue of the Buddha, for example. You know, you make a mental image and you put your mind on it, and then you just stay with it, right? So that brings peace to our minds, right? Because it kind of removes all the distracting thoughts and so forth and so on. And it also builds, you know, great ability of focus, right? It's very, very useful to gain realizations on the Buddhist path, right? To truly gain realization of, you know, impermanence, realization that we will die. We know we will die, right? But we know it here, but we don't know it here, right? I mean, there's, as Geshe-la says, that there's something, there's no connection between the hard drive and the computer, or something like that, he says, right? There's a gap between, you know, we're trying to, yeah, anyway. So basically, we don't live our life as if we were going to die. You know, we don't think about death, right? We think we're going to live pretty much forever. You know, I mean, I did a calculation once, you know, like if you're sleeping 8 hours at night, you're very fortunate to wake up the next morning, because in those 8 hours in this world, and if you take 6 billion people, it came out to around, I don't know, few tens of thousands of people who have died in those 8 hours, you know? So, you know, it could easily be one of those. So that's what when you finally actually really understand that, you know, and you live your life like, you know, that today could be the last day, that's called gaining a realization. You know, you have basically an unshakable, not belief, because belief means that it's not, you know, but unshakable, it's a truth, right? It becomes a truth. And so you live your life like that, right? And then you don't, you know, if you live your life as if tomorrow is going to be the last day, or today might be the last day, then you don't accumulate so much. You know, you don't spend so much effort in accumulation and meeting and all those other things, right? You spend your life much more in positive endeavors. So there's a story of this monk who, you know, this was in India, I don't know, back in the 4th, 5th, 5th, 6th centuries, like that. And so he was in this monastery, and, you know, monks have what? Two robes, right? Because they had to wear one and have one that can be washed. And he had two robes, a set of chappals, which is like sandals, right? Those little flip-flop things you get in India with a little, you know. And then he had maybe a book or something like that. You know, those were his worldly possessions, right? And so he had this one room in the monastery. And so every night before he went to bed, you know, he would like put his, you know, fold his robe up in the right place, and, you know, put his cushion in the corner, and, you know, he would, you know, and he would take his broom. In India, you have those, what do you call it, sweep the broom, you know, with those, you know what I mean, those long, you know, that you can sweep the floor with, right? So every night before he went to bed, he would sweep the floor and clean it up really well, right? And so somebody's asked him, like, so why do you do all this stuff, you know, right before you go into bed? He said, well, you know, I may not wake up tomorrow. So, and somebody else is going to have this room. Right? I want to leave it in a nice way. right? So that's a guy who has that realization, right? So anyway, so that's an example of what analytical meditation is working towards, right? That realization that everything's changing, right? Everything is on constant flux, and not just the gross flux, like tables, break, and all that stuff. But even moment by moment, and you'll learn this in another class, it's changing. So you get realization about how death, and then comes realizations about refuge. Why the Buddha's and his teachings will lead us. Is an object of refuge, which means that will lead us out of suffering, right? And then, you gain realization about karma, for example, how everything, positive or negative, has a consequence. Every action has a consequence. And then comes, these are kind of like the stages, right? That Lama Tsongkhapa wrote out, when he synthesized all of the Buddhist scriptures, right? The Buddha's words and the Indian commentaries, right? So that's what the Lam Rim is about. You go topic by topic and you do these analytical meditations, and they make it really easy because there's all these commentaries on each topic. Like the meditation on death, for example, has three main topics. Death is certain, the time of death is uncertain, and finally at the time of death, nothing but the Dharma will help us, right? So those are three main topics, and underneath each of those is three subtopics. So you can really think about these things, and you can really understand how death is. You might not wake up tomorrow, right? So those are analytical meditations where you are, working, you're using reason, right, to probe, to find counterexamples. That says, the Buddha himself said, right? Look and don't believe me just because I said it, right? It's not really a realization then it's out of belief. It has to become yours, right? So that's the analytical meditation, right? And then finally there's, what's called review meditation, which is basically where, you've been working, let's say, on a lot of these topics, right? And, you've kind of progressed to some certain point, and then you kind of go back and you say, oh, what were the three things about death, and you forget, right? And so every day, a lot of times, teachers suggest to kind of go back in your head and you just go back and just go point by point by point and just review them, right? Just to start, spend 5 minutes and you review all the things that you've learned so far, right? So that's kind of called review meditation, right? It's not analytical, it's not placement, but it's just, you're kind of going back in your mind to keep fresh, what you have already learned or gained, right? So, those are the three types of meditations. And most of the time, in our tradition, you will spend on the breath, on the concentration meditation, right? And on analytical meditation, right? Concentration or placement meditation is good, right? It brings our mind peace and calm, calmness, and makes it sharper, right? Makes it less easily distracted. So that's good, and it has a purpose, but the real, real progress, spiritual progress, is when we gain those realizations, right? Because that's how we transform our minds, right? Because ultimately the Buddha said, it's about the mind, right? The problem isn't outside. mean, somebody else is not the problem. The problem is in our mind. So we have to transform our mind, and to transform the mind, we have to gain realizations. To gain realizations, we have to do analytical meditations, and so that's why in our tradition, we do a lot of these analytical meditations, and in the set, in the modules that follow this one, right, each of them is basically one of those topics, and, you know, some of, and that I talked about, and then there's more of them, and you'll, you know, you'll be doing analytical meditations in them, right? But it's always good to start with, doing some concentration meditation, because you need that anyway. I mean, it brings your mind to rest, first of all, right? Because otherwise, you know, if your mind is distracted, then you're not going to be able to do an analytical meditation very well anyway, right? So you need to calm your mind down. And then, so that's one purpose. But of course, as I said, you know, it makes your mind sharper. So that's another purpose. So that you can apply it towards your analytical meditation. The way that you, when you do analytical meditations, and that's what I was, you know, what you do is that you think about a point, right? You think about whether it's true or not, right? You try to, you know, try to poke holes in it, right? You think about your own experience, right? In my life, you know, like we were doing, right? In my life, you know, how much, you know, how many, you know, partners I fell in love with, and they just, you know, it went away and so forth and so on, right? So you use own experience to kind of get that insight, right? So once you have that insight that, oh, you know, it's true. It really, you know, all this energy I've spent, you know, on meeting or accumulating and so forth and so on, hasn't done me that much good. So when you get that insight, you know, like in truly, you know, like in your heart, you know, you really get, wow, you know, you have that aha moment, you know, like that. So what they say is, at that moment, you stop your analytic, you know, you stop your rational thinking, and then you use your concentration to just sit with it, right? Sit with that insight, right? So we did it a little bit, right? When I said, okay, when you get some, you know, when I said birth ends in death, and I said, okay, think about your past experience, and, you know, when you get some insight, just use that as, you know, just focus on that, right? And so what you do is you focus on that and you put your mind on that and stay with it as long as you can. And of course, it'll kind of dissipate, right? And you'll get distracted again. So then what you do is you think about those things again. You do the analytical meditation again and you go back to the same insight, right? Or maybe some other insight, right? And then you put your mind on it again. And you do this over and over and over, right? And that's how the realizations become strong, right? Because they become part of you. Because otherwise, you know, yeah, you know, you get it for a second or a minute, whatever it is, and then it's just like, you know, you go on with the rest of your day, and it's, you know, it's gone, right? So this is how it kind of makes it sticky, right? The other thing is, when you do analytical meditations, don't just start saying, well, I know birth ends in death. I mean, I know that already, right? The interesting thing is not that we know it intellectually. That's not the interesting part. We know that, right? All of the things that you're going to, you know, hear, you know, in the other modules, none of it is rocket science, right? Everybody knows all of this stuff, right? But we really don't know it, right? That's the part where that work comes, right? So So yeah, we know birth ends in death, but you still, the process of convincing yourself that birth really does end in death is where the realizations come from, right? So a lot of people, you know, make that mistake, you know, and they start a meditation, and they're like, okay, I don't, what's the point of this, right? I know birth ends in death, or I know that, you know, things are constantly changing, or I know that, even emptiness, for example, you can take it for granted, you know, certain points of it. I know it already, right? But that's not the point. The point is working through that, and in that process, it becomes part of us. Does that make sense? Yeah. If anybody has any questions, you can just, yeah. Oh, there's a mic. Oh, you're the mic. Thank you. And hello to the people who are listening on the, or watching on the, which camera? Oh yeah, that camera.
Thank you. Well, there is two questions. No? The first one is related with the types of meditation. Let's see, in certain way, thinking that there is one type of meditation, like concentration meditation, focus point. Another one is analytical meditation. Could be another approach to that? Let's see, another approach, no? That could be, for example, in order to go to analytical, we need the focus point.
Mm-hmm.
So it's algebra to go to calculus. So not independent, no, it's something that we need to sharp our mind to go into analytical. The other one is, in terms of the, let's see, it's our last day today. No, we are going to die tomorrow or whatever, no? If we approach that as we are going to die, I think perhaps the other approach is that nobody dies. So it's kind of separation, no, the mind and the body, but we are not going to die. So the thing is that the mind, I don't know, is eternal, no? It's going through life to life to life to life. So we are not dying in the sense of dying, no? It's not over, no? It's just kind of separation.
Yes, but when we talk about death, we're talking about the death of this body, right? I mean, we're not really always thinking, oh, my mind is going to continue, and, you know, into the next life. And, you know, I mean, if we really did that, you know, we would actually be making a lot, we would pace ourselves in a, you know, we would think, you know, we would do things thinking, okay, I'm setting myself up for the next life, right? But we don't think like that, right? So when we say death, we really mean the death of this, you know, death of me as I know myself, right? So that's what I'm talking about, right? And we spend so much effort in our life to prolong our life, right? You know, all the vitamins we take and all the et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, or, I'm not saying that we shouldn't take care of our body, because we do need to take care of our body, otherwise you can't benefit yourself and you can't benefit others, certainly, right? So, but the point, what the Buddha was saying is that we spend it in, you know, you spend, we waste so much energy on being lazy, right? One of the antidotes, you know, I was one time, I remember going to talk to my teacher. We were going on a walk, and I said, you know, I have my practice has kind of fallen apart, and you know, I haven't been really doing very much, and blah blah blah. And he said, well, you need to go back to the death meditation, because if you really understand that today's going to be the last day, you're not going to be lazy. you know, you're gonna spend every second, you know, in a constructive way, right? So that's what I meant, but you know, I'm not thinking that my mind is gonna, I've been practicing Buddhism for what, 25 years now? I still don't think that every day that my mind is gonna continue to the next life. You know, that's not how I live. Right? I still think that, you know, most of the time, I think that, you know, there's always gonna be a tomorrow. Right? Oh, there's...
You were mentioning different types of meditation, the breath, right? You were saying the breath. Does meditation, though, my question would be, I guess, does meditation come down to your senses? For example, I've been meditating on and off for a year, and I find, like when I go out to nature, right, I'll sit in nature, and then it becomes my breath, what I'm smelling, the smells of nature, the sounds, the birds. Then you start hearing the sounds a little further away. Then when if my mind starts going, then I use my breath to anchor, right, to bring it back. But when I'm in that moment, even the sun, the way the sun hits you on your skin, you know, you start feeling that. Like, does it come down to the senses, I think, maybe, you know?
That's actually interesting because... in Buddhism, at least in this tradition, yeah, actually, and this is true in all of Buddhism, that it's not actually, it's the other way around.
Okay.
If you're concentrating on the senses, then it's not meditation.
Okay.
Remember, the idea is to transform our mind, right? So if we are listening to a babbling brook, let's say. Babbling Brook. And we are, you know, it's pleasant and so forth and so on, and we kind of just are sitting there and we're just listening to it and the birds and so forth and so on. That's not doing anything for our mind. Right? That's not really working on transforming our mind. Right? So, when we talk about on the breath, the concept, you know, so you could say, we do it on the breath, and the breath is it's not mental, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, when you become really good at focus, right, and your mind is no longer is effortless, let's say, right, and you can concentrate on an object and effortlessly stay on it for as long as you want. At that point, when you actually are breathing, even though your mind is on the breath, your mind is not actually on the sensation of the breath. It's in a different place. So what I'm trying to say is, even the breath meditation actually is not dependent on the senses. When we start out, it is. At this point, right now, we're not there yet, right? At this point, when we are putting our mind on the breath, we are actually concentrating on the sense. You know, the in-breath is cool and the out-breath is warm and how it goes in and out, how our tummy rises and falls and all this stuff, right? We are concentrating on the senses. But when you get to the highest level of concentration, called the ninth level of calm abiding, at that point, you're no longer conscious of your breath. But your mind is absolutely stable and focused. So even there, it becomes a mental exercise. So for example, you know, somebody might say, well, what if, you know, like, you know, you can, like you can use an image, for example, as an object of meditation. Right? Like, let's say you like the statue of the Buddha, you know, and you say, okay, well, I'll use that as a concentration meditation. But if you're looking at the statue and you just focus on the statue and your mind is still, that's not meditation. What you have to do is focus on the statue and really see exactly what it's like, and then make a mental image. Close your eyes, then focus on the statue. Then it becomes meditation. So it's always, the object always has to be a mental object, right? You know? So another one is, for example, there's meditations, different types of meditations where you're doing practices where they're mantras, for example, and you're doing the mantra over and over and over again, you know, right? So there, again, like the breath, after a point, you're not concentrating on the mantra anymore. Your mind is actually indifferent, you know, it's not on the sound. So all these things, even though the object might be the breath, might be the mantra, might be whatever, which actually involves a sense, right? When it finally gets down to it, when you get good at it, right? It's no longer it's no longer the tangible object anymore.
It would be the goal, right? Which you're searching for, or not searching, but my mind works very fast. I have a very overactive mind.
Yeah.
I'm a combat veteran, okay? And like the babbling brook, listening to that babbling brook slows my mind down.
Oh, no, there is benefit to that. Don't get me wrong, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's benefit to that. If that brings you peace, you know, if that calms your mind down, there's nothing wrong with that.
Okay.
Right? I mean, if it helps you, there's nothing wrong with that.
That's not meditation.
Right. If you are trying to gain realizations and so forth and so on the spiritual path, then that's not the meditation. That's not the stepping stone to that.
So the object would be for the meditation to lead to a spiritual path, or for the meditation to lead to inner happiness and inner peace.
Well, in Buddhism, it's both. It's the same, right?
Yeah.
But first, of course, if your mind is so overactive that you can't concentrate on an object, then I think that, you know, if it works for you to go into nature and calm your mind that way, that's a good thing to do.
Well, not just with nature. I can wash the dishes, for example. Close my eyes, feel the water landing on my hands.
Right.
The soap on the dish, the softness of
right.
the, you know, and I can focus just on that for the 20 minutes I'm washing dishes.
Right, and that's so that object is what you're saying is you are really focusing on the presence, on just
the moment,
which again is not quite a sense. thing, right? It's not a sensory thing, right? So that's what I'm saying, is that it's still something else underneath it, right? It's not the dish that you're focusing on, right?
Yeah.
Or the water. Yeah. It's something else below it.
The moment.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. And that's what all this is about.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. Thank you.
Okay. Oh, yes.
I remember when I think it was like in one of the early classes you said, people saying, I got an app for meditation.
Yeah.
I know I had an app that was an insight timer that had like guided meditations, and the same ones where like there were babbling brooks, you know, that you would sit with. And, you know, just starting to come here, I started realizing that was kind of distracting me from actually trying to learn to control my mind.
So you found that the concentrating on the sound that came from the app or whatever it was doing was not helping you? That's what you're saying?
Well, what I'm trying to say is, like, now, a guided meditation, is that like kind of a training you, more training on how to meditate, or is there a guided meditation will be true, you know? I mean, to me, it's like I struggle with guided meditations where it just seems like I'm getting distracted from trying to meditate. You know, it's like talking over the meditation. I don't know.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So you're saying that when...
Is guided meditation more like the teaching?
And I see.
And
okay.
then you
okay.
separate
okay.
yourself from that and meditate?
No. I mean, if a guided meditation is done well, you know, if a guided meditation is done well, then what happens is your mind is actually in meditation, right? And when the person speaks, right, it doesn't perturb the mind, right? It kind of just floats above it. You still are hearing, you still are, processing it, right? But it doesn't affect your mental concentration, right? And not everyone can do guide meditations well, you know. So I can see that. I can see what you're saying. So if it doesn't, if you find that, you know, whatever you're using, a guided meditation, let's say that's on a tape or something like that, and you're doing in the middle of the meditation and your mind is kind of going someplace else, right? Then one of two things. Either your mind is too distracted and, you know, you need to kind of do the concentration meditation so that you can kind of have more focus, or the guided meditation is just not very good. You know? So you kind of have to know, you know, you kind of have to see for yourself which works for you, right? I don't know if I answered your question. Kind of good enough? Okay. Okay. Anybody? All right. So the rest of the, you know, this, you know, session, what I wanted to talk about was, you know, misconceptions we might have about meditation and pitfalls, right? So that, you know, these are things that is important to remember so that when we face obstacles, we know that we know what to do, right? Or we know how to handle them, right? So, first of all, a lot of times what happened, and this happened with me too, is, you know, you know, let's say you go to a teaching and, you know, and it was a wonderful teaching and, you know, there was this meditation and you get, you know, super excited and you basically just, you spend hours on it, right? You know, because you're really, really enthusiastic, right? It's great, right? But you have to know how to pace yourself. Okay? Because what happens is you will burn out very quickly. So this happens to a lot of people. You know, I don't know if actually I do know one person here because he came and talked to me about 6 months ago about this. So, I mean, not in this room, but I know he, you know, and one of the center members actually came and talked to me about it. So, you know, he was spending a lot of time, he was really trying to, you know, he was pushing himself, but, you know, you cannot force transformation, you know, and the more you try to force it, the less, like, you know, less you're going to reach it, you know, that's how the process works, right? So you kind of have to, like, start slow, right? That's why, you know, the scriptures, for example, say, you know, you, and I talked about this in the first session, I think, that, you know, you start with like 3 minutes meditation a day, right? Then you expand it to 5, and you expand it to 7, expand it to 10. And even when you expand it to 10, you actually do like 5 minutes, and you take a break, and you do 5 minutes, right? So you have to kind of pace yourself. It's kind of like going to the gym, right? If the first day do the 400-pound barbell, right? You're going to hurt yourself, right? So you kind of have to work to work. I don't know if anybody can do 400 pounds or not. I'm sure somebody can. But you have to still have to work towards the 400, right? Or the 200 or whatever it is. So it's the same exact thing. And burnout is not uncommon. You know, it does happen quite a bit. And so then what happens is, you know, you just get, you know, you're like, okay, I can't do this. And I'm tired of it. And you stop for, you know, weeks or months or years so it's something to really remember, right? You know, maybe not now, but in the future, if you are, you know, something like this where you get really excited about, you know, something, a new teaching, new meditation or new, you know, whatever, to remember how to kind of go about it, right? The other thing is, don't have expectations. This is a big one, right? I've spent, you know, like you can say, it should be getting easier by now. I've been doing this for 2 months, you know, well, how come it's not easier, right? Or I should have gotten this realization by now. I still, you know, I'm still stuck at so-and-so, right? Well, if you're stuck at so-and-so, you can go talk to a qualified teacher like Geshe-la or someone, right? I mean, if you're stuck, then it's good to go talk to them. You know, okay, what should I do, right? I do that, right? But I mean, you know, things like, you know, it should be getting easier. Well, maybe not. You know, it's your mind, right? It's the pace at which, you know, it's where your mind is at this very moment and what it can do. And you might find that some things will go really slowly, but other things will go actually pretty quickly. It just depends on what imprints you have built on your mind already from past lives, right? That's really what it comes down to. So, you know, some things are easy for us. You know, for example, I'll give you an example, right? You know that breath meditation? You know, it's an easy meditation, right? I find it extremely challenging. I actually don't do the breath meditation. Right? When I'm doing my meditation, I don't do the breath meditation. Because, you know, 30 seconds later, my mind is someplace else. But, if I use a mental image, I'm wonderful at it. Right? So I had to discover that for myself, right? I spent like a couple of years being, you know, really pissed off, right, about how I can't do everybody else seems to be able to do it, right? Till I realized, well, I just need something else, right? I had a teacher who actually was able to help me, right? He had the insight. So I have this particular image of the Buddha that I really like, right? It's a statue, actually, at Vajrapani, you know, this retreat center in California. And I have a mental image of it, right? It's like ingrained in my, you know, somewhere up here, you know? And if I close my eyes, I can see it immediately, right? So that's what I use. And that's what, it works great for me. So, you know, like that, right? So it just depends on where your mind is at, you know? Hopefully my next life I'll be able to do the breathing meditation. But then I probably won't be able to do the mental image, you know? Who knows? So, see, I'm good at visualization. So that's another thing, right? You might find, you know, if you keep coming to, you know, this center and if you keep staying in this tradition, you know, you will find there are times at various practices we have to do, like, all these visualizations. You know, there's this Buddha, you know, imagine there's a Buddha in front of you and he has four arms and this, that, and, you know, blah, 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 all this stuff, right? And some people just can't do it. You know, it's very difficult for them. So the important thing is not to be discouraged by it. You know, just keep at it, you know, and you'll find that it gets easier over time. Maybe if I had continued with the breath meditation, it would have been easier over time, you know, but I just gave up on it when I found something that worked. So like that, you know, some people are not good at visualization, but visualization works great for me. I can do visualizations, right? So, like that, you kind of have to see what works for you, right? But don't have those expectations that just because you're doing it, it's just going to go fast. Right? Maybe it will, which is great, but most likely it won't. You know? The other interesting thing, who said this? I think it was a teaching by Chodron Rinpoche. I don't know if he passed away. He was one of my teachers. He passed away, I don't know, 2 years ago? Last year. And he said that you should expect things to get, when you know you're making progress when things are getting worse. And we were like, really? And he explained that when you, what he meant was that when you're making real spiritual progress, you are starting to purify the negative imprints that you have in your mind, right? And when you do that, what happens is a lot of the really bad, really, really negative imprints, right, that would, if you weren't practicing, let's say you were going to be born in the hell realm or something like that, you killed, 1,000 people, like Milarepa, for example, did black magic, burnt the whole house down and killed a whole family, right? So if you had done something like that in one of the past lives, most likely you're going to be in some hell realm somewhere at some point, right? But if you're really making spiritual progress, then it's when you're starting to purify those things. And what happens is that karma can ripen now, but in a much less, bad way. Right? Does that make sense? I mean, I'll give you an example. Like, I know someone who, was doing this practice. He had been given this by his teacher, and he spent like a month in retreat, or maybe a couple of months, I can't remember. Anyway, and suddenly he got really sick. He just kept getting sick, and so his teacher said, "Well, take a break and go back to it, right? Because most likely the sickness is actually, some really bad karma that's ripening now as just a sickness, right? It could be much worse," he said. It's just so expect obstacles to arise is what I'm trying to say, right? And that's what this Chodron Rinpoche was saying, right? Is you're making spiritual progress when things are getting worse. I mean, it's not like things are getting worse, they're going to continue to get worse, right? But you're going to face obstacles. And that's one thing to remember is, you gain some realizations really quickly and then you're just blocked, right? It happens, right? But you have to know that these obstacles will arise. And you kind of just have to, say, okay, well, I'll just keep doing what I'm doing, the best I can. And, if you have been studying and practicing and you've made some progress, you have a certain amount, a certain confidence in the teachings, right? You gain certain confidence in the teachings. You know that this actually is the path for you, right? At that point, you kind of know that, okay, it's not like you're going to say, well, I know that, I'm facing all these obstacles, I'm blocked, this is not working for me, I'm going to go do something else. Because you have some confidence at that point, right? So you say, okay, well, I'll just keep going because I know that sooner or later, this will pass, right? So that's the thing to remember, is that you're going to have obstacles, right? So some days your meditation may go really well, and for the next few weeks, it'll be absolutely awful. Actually, it's guaranteed that if you have a good day, the next day is going to be a bad day. I can tell you that much. You're not going to be able to replicate it. If you don't have that, that's the first thing, to let go of expectations, right? If you have a good day, don't expect the next day to be a good day. It's not going to happen.
It's like golf.
Maybe so. I don't know. I'm not a golfer, so maybe it is like... Okay. Oh, yes, question.
So what if we had the intention for it to be good day every day?
Oh, of course. I mean, you know, the intention is wonderful. We have to have that intention, right? I mean, that's why we have the, you know, that's why it's important to start with a motivation, right? Always start. Actually, Rinpoche says, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, Rinpoche's get confusing, which Rinpoche I'm talking about. Not Chodron Rinpoche this time, but Lama Zopa Rinpoche says that, you know, and all the teachers say really, that you start all your activity with a motivation. You know, you wake, for example, he says, you know, all his students, the same advice he gives to all the students, you wake up in the morning and the first thing you think, how wonderful, even before you're getting out of bed, right? You're like, you're kind of opening your eyes and you look into the ceiling. You think, how wonderful that I have another day. Right? So that's the first thought he says, to think. I'm glad, you know, I could have been one of the dead ones overnight, right? And then he says, next thing he says, set the motivation for the day. Whatever I do today with my body, speech, or mind, may it be of benefit to others. Right? Because, you know, maybe the day doesn't go all that well and you screw up and you're not of particular benefit to others. It could be, right? Because we're human, right? I mean, every day is not going to be a benefit to others. You know, we know that, right? But if we don't set the motivation, it's not going to happen at all. Right? I mean, that's the whole point, right? The motivation actually builds the imprints in our minds, right? And so, you know, for example, they have a saying that says, you know, every achievement or every attainment begins at the tip of a wish. Right? If you have the wish, you have the aspiration, you can gain whatever you are trying to attain, right? But if you don't have that aspiration, you're not going to go there, right? So that's why the motivation is so important. So to set the motivation, to have the intention to have a good day, of course, right? But don't be disappointed when it doesn't turn out to be a good day. That's all, right? And, you know, it's important to accept just what happens. You know, whatever happens, you know, like, maybe, you know, oh, I remember, I'll tell you an example. You know, so I used to, you know, when my kids were little, I used to get up way early in the morning before they got up, and I would start my practice and all that, right? And some days, maybe I didn't get up early enough, or maybe the kids got up a little too, you know, earlier than they normally get, and they start, you know, banging around or whatever, right? And you know, I'd just get angry, right? And then after a couple of months, right? I mean, I realized, you know, my meditation is really not of much purpose, right? If I'm just getting angry on the cushion, right? So, you know, I just have to accept that, you know, the kids are not going to wake up on time just so that I can finish my meditation. Right? I mean, that's just the way life is. So some days you just, you know, maybe you'll get lucky, and maybe most days you're not all that lucky, but just accept what happens. Actually, this reminds me of another story. One of my teachers, he's a Swiss monk, Venerable René. He was here maybe, I don't know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago. I invited him. Anyway, and And he's basically in retreat 11 and a half months of the year, right? He comes out of retreat for two weeks in the summer to teach, and that's it. He's gone for, you know. So this was like in the early 80s when he was first starting out. He's been a monk for almost 40 years now. Anyway, and so he was in the early 80s. He was kind of starting out, and he'd gone back to Switzerland. He had gone back, you know, because, you know, he backpacked from Switzerland all the way through, all the way through Iran and Afghanistan, all this. Actually, he was in Tehran on the night that the Shah got overthrown. And he almost didn't make it out. Anyway, so he backpacked all the way to India, and then, you know, he went to all these ashrams and all this stuff, did that stuff. He went back to Switzerland to get some more money, you know, so that he could go back and do a retreat in Bodh Gaya, right? And, you know, and so he had set up, you know, he had, you know, back then, of course, you know, you do the two letters and telegrams, right? So he had set up this, you know, they found this retreat hut somewhere, and he had talked to the person, like, oh yeah, it's a great place, you know, it's quiet, and so forth and so on, right? And so he shows up with his one suitcase, and, you know, his first couple of days, it's going great, you know, it's so nice and quiet. And then suddenly, the banging starts, right? It turns out that across the road in the, you know, the fort, whatever, across the road from him, they started building this new house, right? Through the woods a little bit, but, you know, and in India, there, you know, there with the, you know, all, everything's done by hand, right? So it takes forever, right? So, and, you know, his mind just went out the window. But, you know, so for a couple of weeks, he was like, you know, he was going to power through it. He was going to white knuckle it, right? And it wasn't working, you know? Just get worse and worse. So then what he realized, he had that one book with him. He had one book in his, you know, and back then you didn't, you know, the early 80s, we didn't, you know, there were only a few translations of books. There weren't, you know, there were like, a, you know, 10 or 20 books that were, you know, in Buddhism that were around. So he had one of them, which was the first translation of Shantideva's text, right? You know, Bodhisattva's Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, right? You know, the Shantideva's text that Geshe-la talks about all the time. So he said, okay, I'll start, you know, I'll get the book out and I'll start going chapter by chapter, right? I can't do what I, you know, I came to do a retreat on, you know, on calm abiding, you know, concentration, right? I'm not going to be able to do that. So, okay, so I'll just start with this book. And it was of great help to him, right? He's actually just published, last year he published his 40 years of insight on that book, right? So that's what I mean by, you know, don't have you don't know what's going to happen, you know? But you just have to work through whatever expectations you have. Because you'll face, you know, adverse circumstances. It'll just happen. You know, sickness, you know, job loss, stress. I mean, so many things happen, right? But you just have to be consistent. Just keep at it. And that's how you make progress, right? One thing is, I don't know, you know, this may not happen immediately, but if you continue to actually practice and you are making progress, you know, you might have some kind of unusual experiences, right? So, you know, like, let's say that, you know, like this happens often, actually. Like, a couple of years ago, I was at a retreat, you know, like 3-week retreat, and, you know, about a week into the retreat, this guy just couldn't handle it, right? He had to leave. And actually, what, in these retreats, they actually, you know, take an, do an intake, right, to make sure that you have any, you don't have any psychological issues, and if you do, then to notify them, blah, blah, blah. Because things can arise, right? Suppressed memories arise, you know? Things that you thought you had worked through arise, right? You know, maybe you were angry at your brother or sister and you thought, you know, blah, 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 et cetera. And it turns out that you hadn't. And all. So that's some of the things, you know, or, you know, so things like that can arise, right? So that's kind of, you have to also know that's kind of part of the process, right? And you have to kind of use your own judgment or ask a teacher, right, a qualified teacher, again, that's what they're for. You have to use your judgment to, you know, what to do, right? Maybe you should take a break. You know, if it's really severe, take a break. Otherwise, you know, just continue with it and see what happens, right? And just remember that all these, again, are mental formations, right? There's nothing more than just mental thoughts, mental emotions, mental whatever, right? And just like everything in the mind, it's like the cloud, right? Clouds, they will pass. You know, they come and they go, right? So if you don't give it too much power, it will go. Sooner or later, it will go. But if you follow it, right? If you follow the anger at your brother or sister, whatever it is, or you follow the whatever it happens to be, right? Then you are now staring down the rat hole, right? And it's hard to get back out of it. But to remember that those things are just temporary, you know, it's part of the process. The other thing, and I'll just mention this as an aside. If you really do calm-abiding retreats, like calm-abiding, you know, So those of you, I don't know if you know about I guess this was in the next session, but I'll just give you a quick rundown. So calm-abiding is basically you start, you know, we're doing the concentration meditation on the breath, right, or a mental image or whatever it happens to be, right? So in the beginning, you know, you go through 9 stages. It's called calm-abiding, you know, shamatha. In Sanskrit, Shine in Tibetan. And you go through 9 stages of, you know, of working through each stage, certain, you know, you work through, you know, it's kind of like peeling an onion. You work through certain issues, and then you go to the next stage, and you get, okay, you got to work through those, then you get to the next stage, you know. So at various, and it's written down exactly in each stage what actually arises, and it's amazing, believe me. They actually do, I mean, it's not like just theory. It actually is like that, right? So, but when you get to the 9th stage, when it says you have attained calm abiding, it means that whenever the moment that you bring an object, whatever it is, to your mind never strays and it's effortless, right? You don't have to spend any effort on actually trying to, you know, stay on the breath or keep my mental image in front of me and blah, 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 all those things, right? It's just, there's people who have attained calm abiding, you know. The scriptures say that you can actually do this in this lifetime, you know. It's not unattainable, you know. It says that if you spend about 6 months solid retreat, then you could attain calm abiding. Right, but of course, it's assuming that you have created the causes and conditions, you know, to be able to do it in 6 months, right? So, in any case, so at the 9th stage, you know, you have effort, you know, it's effortless, and so, you know, et cetera. So while you're working through those stages, right, you know, they're like, you can have weird experiences, like, oh, one of them is, everything looks sideways. You know you're sitting up straight like this, but if you open your eyes, everything's like this. Like all the people are sideways, the walls are sideways. It's like gravity is going that way, you know? Strange things happen, you know? So those, you know, so there's just, again, part of stuff arising in the mind, you know.
Definitely not doing that.
Oh, no, it's okay. I mean, it, you know, the good news is that doesn't hurt you. And it's kind of fun, actually, you know. And I mean, it's like, you know that it's strange. I mean, you know that I didn't have that experience, but I had another experience, you know. I didn't have to have it. Somebody else did, you know, next to me, actually, this was a couple of years ago, was having that experience. But because we trade notes, right? So, but I was having some another experience, and you know, it's kind of fun to kind of like, you know, you're sitting there, you're like, you know, it's not real, but it looks totally real, you know. It's kind of a, you know. Anyway, okay. It can be fun, anyway. So, and no drugs involved. Yes, you know, and the other thing about calm abiding is, right, when you get to the, about the, I don't know, sixth stage. You know, you get, start feeling this incredible pleasant sensations, you know, like in your body, right? They call it pliancy. If you look in the text, it says, calls it pliancy. You get, and it's because the winds, the energies through the channels are now, you know, are working or going up and, you know, they're not knotted up and clogged up like they are normally, like right now, right? Because our minds are distracted and it's out of focus and so forth and so on, and we're under stress, whatever happens to the winds. That's why we do the nine, remember when we did the 9-round breathing meditation? I talked about the winds, you know, the central channel. So that it helps with that, right? So when you, so at the sixth stage of calm abiding, you know, they're starting to go really well, right? And so you get all these, you know, your body feels really, you know, it's like, you don't feel pain. You know, you can sit for hours. I mean, like, really, hours. And, you know, you don't feel any pain. And, you know, you feel really light. You know, your body feels, like, really light. You know, it's like as if you're, you know, you could do anything, you know. And, so that's first you get this pliancy, and then somewhere around the, I don't know, eighth stage or something like that, you get this immense, incredible joy in your mind. So you have this joy. You know, I haven't reached calm abiding, so I can't tell you what the joy is like. But I know from people who have reached calm abiding, and it's not the joy of enlightenment. It's not the joy, you know, the joy to joy that the Buddhas or Rinpoche, for example, is always in, right? That's not the same kind of joy, but you still have this joy that you feel, right? Again, without drugs. That's why it reminded me of that. It's just like being on drugs, but without the side effects, you know? So calm abiding is, you know. But again, calm abiding is not the goal, right? Remember, it's the means to an end. It just brings the mind to focus, right? The mind becomes extremely, at the ninth stage, the mind is extremely sharp, you know? It's like a diamond that can, that's what they say, that's the analogy they use. They use a diamond that can cut through anything, right? So whatever analytical meditation you're doing, or whatever, you know, your insights come really quickly, or they're really, you know, deep, you know, or, and so forth and so on, right? Because your mind is now, you know, like you're on doing the impermanence, you're doing the impermanence and death meditation, your mind is like for hours. It's important, you know, you're just on it, right? So the reason they say to develop it is like when you, so impermanence and death is not as difficult to attain, right? You don't need calm abiding to attain impermanence and death. But if you are trying to attain, cut the root of ignorance, root of our delusions, which is ignorance, the mistaken view of reality, which is extremely subtle and so ingrained in our minds that we cannot shake it at all. We cannot even conceive of what it's like, right? For something like that, you have to have probably calm abiding, you know? So that's why they say, you know, that's why the scriptures talk about to get the calm abiding too. You know, if you want to, you know, attain it, you know, become an arhat, you know, who has at least in his meditation has the, you know, has the wisdom realizing emptiness, right? And arhats, you know, they're the ones who are beyond, you know, they're beyond karma, right? They're not under control of karma anymore because they don't do, you know, they have conquered the ignorance, right? They have wisdom realizing emptiness. At least in meditation. Once they get out of meditation, then they're not quite, you know, but then they have to keep, you know, working through all their obscurations. That's why they're not Buddhas yet. They still have obscuration. They have to keep continuing to work on it. So calm abiding. So the way we're starting concentration meditation and the breath and all that is it's all kind of starts work, you know, it's the first step, right? The concentrated meditation, analytical meditation is first step in, it's all working towards that final goal, right? Because each of us has the Buddha nature, right? Each cockroach, each fish, each human being has the Buddha nature, right? And we will all attain Buddhahood. I mean, it's guaranteed, actually. Well, at least that's what the scriptures say. Some will get there sooner, some will get there later. But regardless, everyone will get there, right? But to get there, we have to create the cause and conditions. How do you create the cause and conditions? You have to do it step by step. The first step is what we're doing today, right? And then it all leads lifetime through. Oh, that's another thing to remember. You know, things will not go fast, right? It'll go slowly. So don't expect that in this lifetime you're going to make all these great progress. It may not happen. It may happen, like Venerable Rene, for example, right? Things came relatively easy to him, right? That's because he spent a lot of lifetimes in the past creating cause and conditions for this life to really, you know, for things to come to fruition, right? So if we have in our past have set the things in motion, if we've done these things in the past, then most likely we will make a lot of progress in this life, right? But if we, you know, make the effort in this life, in the following lives, hopefully we'll have a human life, we'll increase the chance of having a human life, without which you can't do any of these things. And if you have a human life, then hopefully you again meet a qualified teacher and so forth and so on. You start on the same, keep going on the same path, and so then finally you get there, right? Anyway, a lot of talking, but anybody have any last minute burning questions since I'm 2 minutes over? No? Okay. For homework, if you wouldn't mind reading the rest of, you know, I think I've assigned first two on the required reading. So if you could do the last three, that's in the handout, right? Or whatever, in the list. Because that talks about some of the meditation and so forth and so on. Okay, so let's finish with a dedication real quick. Page 36. It's a very short one. Due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel bodhicitta that has not arisen arise and grow, and may that which has arisen not diminish, but increase more and more. Thank you very much. See you next week. And please, pick an analytical meditation. The How to Meditate book has analytical meditations. There's lots of meditations. You can, if you have the Lamrim text, you know, there's analytical meditations in there. Pick, like, Impermanence and Death or whatever, right? Pick one of the first ones. And try to do them and see how it goes, right? If you can, if you, and if you like hearing analytical meditation, doing them, and if you go to Venerable Thupten Children's webpage, you know, thuptenchildren.org, she has lots of, you know, recordings. You know, they have recorded her meditations and so forth and so on. So you can use those as well. But try to do some analytical meditation. All right. See you next week.